everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Simply Amazing. I hope everyone had a nice little break. We are getting into the full swing of things now. Off season is pretty much upon us. The winter meetings kick off on Monday morning, which I believe this is coming out on Monday. So we're getting right into the swing. Taryn Sharma, my faithful partner here, and he's back in the mix. How's it going, buddy?
Going well. It's going well. Celebrated my birthday this weekend.
Happy birthday! I didn't know that.
Thank you. Turned 29.
29 forever, pal.
Yeah. And so I had to get my buddy out here, Owen Lynch. And Owen's a big Mets fan, and so he's going to join us on the pod today.
Welcome, Owen.
Thanks so much, Tim and Taryn. Really excited to be here and, you know, joining the pod.
Cool, man. Yeah, let's, I mean, we have a lot to talk about. The Mets, I guess you could say unexpectedly, and that's across the board, whether it be fans, whether it be organization, Jacob DeGrom is no longer a New York Met. He's a member of the Texas Rangers. He's picked up a nice, brand new, shiny 5-year, $185 million deal. That's all guaranteed. It's a sixth year. I believe it's a team option, but it's a mutual sort of thing. I'm not exactly sure on that. There's not even any monetary terms, last I saw, on that sixth year, unless that has changed. But I guess initial reactions, guys, was this expected on your parts? And two, do you think this was not the best move for Jake, not the best move for the Mets, but could this work out okay for the Mets, you know, outside looking in? Taryn, I'll start with you.
Yeah. So obviously just disappointing, especially anytime that you lose a franchise icon. I know that a lot of people are comparing this to the Seaver thing. Seaver was traded. I mean, the comparison, I don't think really exists there, besides the fact that you have an all-time great leaving the Mets and going to another team. Like Steve Cohen said this week, it is Jake's choice. It's his right to sign where he wants in free agency. And I guess now in hindsight, we kind of get the sense that it was trending this way. Some interesting articles have come out about Jake not necessarily being interested in staying in New York. And I think that maybe we thought that that might be the case long term. I mean, he was underpaid on his extension. Money was going to be a major motivating factor for him. And especially with his injuries, getting a significant number of years. And I think that that's probably the biggest difference in terms of the offers that he had from to come back to New York or to go to Texas. Texas going 5 years with the option for the sixth, whereas the Mets kind of wanted to keep it around 3 years and have it around $37 million a year. I thought that the Mets offer was fair and he chose to go elsewhere. And it's sad that he won't finish his career with the Mets, but that's the decision he made. Owen?
Yeah, totally agree. I think that Jake's impact on the Mets was monumental. Of course, you know, I think everyone was hoping that he would lead us to the promised land, you know, get a World Series out of him, angering our rotation. So it's definitely disappointing that that didn't come to fruition there. But at the same time, I totally understand his decision. To Taryn's point, you know, the 5 years, he's age 34, I believe, right now. So he's going to be, you know, ending his, you know, contract with the Rangers at 39, a guy who's had a lot of injuries. You know, I think that after, if he took a 3-year deal with the Mets per se, money aside, it's very likely that he's, you know, had a few more injuries during that contract. And then come age 37, he can't really get the same money in those last 2 years that he would have gotten in the Rangers contract that he signed. So I think that it makes sense from a business perspective. Obviously, the Rangers, I think, had 69 wins last year, something around that. So he's definitely choosing the money, it seems like, over the World Series potential aspirations, you know, which could be a factor. So it's always interesting when you see players between those two things. But definitely a bummer to lose Jake. But I think, to answer your question, Tim, I think that the Mets will certainly be okay. There's a lot of great options out there. Carlos Rodon, you know, Senga, a little bit lower tier in that sense than Rodon, but, you know, great option nonetheless. I think taking a 1A and 1B approach could be a great way to fill in the void that Jake's obviously going to be leaving behind. Justin Verlander would be a dream to come true, I think, for, you know, myself and a lot of Mets fans to fill the void that Jake's leaving. So yeah, I think a lot of good options out there, and I think we'll be quite all right. But
So about the Rangers and how many wins they had last year, I've heard a lot of people kind of say that Jake chose the money over winning. With them bringing Bochy in, the way that they're rebuilding their farm system, the possibility of them in a couple of years of having Jake, Jack Leiter, and Kumar Rocker in their rotation, given all the money that they've spent also on the middle of their infield, it's possible that they could be good like further on down the line. I know that right now we're entering the beginning of that 3 to 5 year window that Steve talked about in terms of wanting to win a World Series. But I do think that he's going from like a win now situation where there is a lot of pressure, and it's especially New York, to going to a situation that, you know, they would like to win. I don't think that there's all that pressure on them, but I think he'll have a great manager in Bruce Bochy there as well. For me, it's just sad that after he became the best pitcher in the world, we basically had like one playoff start from him. And that, you know, that's on the Mets also. They didn't do enough at the other parts of the team to improve it to that point, so that we could have more of those situations. But he went out as a winner here, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to have seen him pitch for the Mets for many years and go from unheralded prospect to being best pitcher in the world. But that part of it is a bit of a bummer for me.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, the legacy itself is always tough, especially in a situation like this, which on a couple of different levels, it's very unique. You know, publicly, Jacob DeGrom has said many times, you know, always wanted, always thought it would be cool to stay with one team his whole career. Said multiple times that he had liked New York. And I guess, you know, behind the scenes and now after the deal is done, you start to hear other versions of how things were going down, what kind of feelings you saw. And, you know, that's going to happen. That's just the natural order of things. As far as Jake's trajectory as a pitcher and where he's landing in Texas, you know, this isn't your typical 34-year-old, you know, Hall of Fame trajectory guy. He started late. He was 26 when he made his debut. In the last, I don't know, I'm going back to the start of 2021, he's only made 24 starts, even including the 26 starts, even including the COVID season, which, you know, he's lights out for that first half of the season. He's had 12 starts. 38 starts total since the start of 2020. You know, this is a guy who does not have a lot of mileage on him. He has had some issues recently, injury-wise, and it's been a recurring theme. So naturally, there's going to be a lot of risk on the Rangers side. But the offense they've put together, the willingness of that ownership to keep on spending money as they have, and I think you have to assume there will be additional moves because, you know, Jake and the remaining starters they have in Texas right now, which I believe is John Gray, Martin Perez, and tip of my tongue, I can't think of the other guy. Anyway, there's pieces to fill if they do want to contend. And judging by how they're spending, I think contention is well within their reach, maybe not this season, but soon. You know, Adolis Garcia is a terrific player who kind of falls under the radar. He was a later rookie. Hits the cover off the ball. You have so many pieces in Simeon and Seager and Josh Lowe, who had a real breakout season with Texas last year. You know, you have a lot of pieces in place. You know, a great manager in Bruce Bochy. There's going to be an extra buzz with a player like DeGrom on that roster. And in that sense, you know, I'm happy for that organization going ahead and moving forward. That being said, I mean, this leaves the Mets with, you know, internally, I'm sure they had a contingency plan for this, but it leaves the Mets with decisions to make. I mean, you had, what was it, a total of 11 starts last year of Max and Jake combined. I believe it was 11. Maybe it was even less than that. You know, this was, by all accounts, this was going to be, you know, for the next few years, this was your tandem. And now the Mets kind of have to rework that. I know you guys were talking a bit about Verlander. What's your take on spending Jake-level yearly money? You're looking at probably north of $40 million, or at least, you know, 37.5 plus, over, let's assume, 2 years with a third option for Verlander. This is a guy who's 39 years old. There's risk involved with anybody, and we'll talk about Carlos Rodon too, but when it comes to Verlander, he's such an elite pitcher, and even at an advanced age, he's been so productive and so consistently productive. I mean, you know, going back to 2018, I have the numbers here. Jacob deGrom has a 2.05 ERA, and Verlander has a 2.33 ERA. I mean, these guys are very, very similar. Verlander has less walks per nine than deGrom over that span. deGrom has just a shade higher at 12.2 K per nine to 11 point, just a shade under 11.4 for Verlander. You know, they're very comparable. Now, again, Jake is much younger. Verlander can absolutely be that 1A, 1B with Max Scherzer if the Mets want to go that route. Guys, yeah. If it's your money and you're going that three, that two plus, let's say three with an option year tied in, are you willing to kick in $40 million a year for Justin Verlander to fill that gap that Jacob deGrom left?
Given that it's not my money, yeah.
Totally under the preface that it's not your money.
Yeah, I think Verlander and Scherzer would be a great and dominant 1-2. He just recently had the reconstructive surgery on his elbow, so hopefully he's got a good number of innings left in that. And I just think that he's like a gamer, even despite some of the struggles that he's had in the playoffs. And I really like Verlander, and I think that he continues to build that edge for the team. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I would love to have Verlander on the Mets. I think that perfectly in line with Steve's window of, you know, 3 to 5 years for a championship.
Yeah.
Adding a guy like Justin Verlander really quickly, although Jake will never be replaced, the Mets fans will still miss him. I think adding a guy like Verlander quickly fills the void that would otherwise be left as much as we can with one other arm. So I'd love to have him on the team.
And you talk about buzz. I think that he would also bring that as well. I think that he's a guy that's really well regarded. I think that he would fit in well in the clubhouse. Verlander would be a great addition. One thing with thinking about who the Mets could get, I felt like last year there was kind of a concern over the fact that there wasn't a strong lefty presence in the bullpen and or on the staff. And so bringing in Rodon, I think, changes that. It sort of solves that issue if you're comfortable with how his medicals look. And, you know, if the Mets are going to be paying that amount of money, I would feel confident that they would have a good look at those.
Well, he hasn't been really an injury risk, you know, per se. There was some, elbow inflammation back in 2019. He looks to have gotten past that. He's had some shoulder soreness, and this stuck with him through into the minors. Has kind of messed with him a little bit. 2017, 2018, did some rehab. It stayed away from him until, I want to say, he had some soreness in 2020. And it's mostly been okay. I believe he was on the IL this year, but they did not specify as to what. But, oh, no, that was only for a couple of days. My apologies. I like Rodon. I think he's got – I mean, statistically, he's got one of the more efficient, effective, productive four-seam fastballs in baseball. I mean, he's had that repertoire going for him. In Chicago, I mean, Dylan Cease, the action that he's been able to see off of his four seam, where he worked in tandem pretty much with Carlos Rodon, and they were able to really put those pieces together. And I think that, you know, at 30 years old, every pitcher has some injury issues. I wouldn't anticipate or speculate that he's a candidate for a serious thing, but if it happens, it happens. I mean, if you're willing to throw $40 million at a 40-year-old pitcher, you know, if you're going to take it a little less, a little longer and a little less AAV for Rodon, for a guy who's had some injury issues in the past, I'm okay with that. I think that he is a solid, I mean, on this roster, he'd be a 2 or a 1B behind Max. Any other rotation in baseball, I mean, Rodon is an ace. He's been that guy, and I would be all for it. If it was my choice and I had to say 2 for Verlander, or you're probably looking at 5 for Rodon, I think I might go Rodon just because he's got such upside and ace potential. Verlander will be a great stopgap, and really, if Steve Cohen wants to go all out, just go both. If you're going to commit to Verlander for 2 and commit to Rodon for 5, you know, looks like you have the front of your rotation pretty much bridged out for the next few years, right?
Yeah. And last year he threw 178 mm-hmm. innings. That's the most that he's ever thrown. It's the most that he's thrown in 2016. He had 165 innings. So he's shown that he can do that. I know that he had those injured seasons that you talked about kind of in the middle of his career, when he was building up to his prime. But I mean, if he could stay healthy, I think that he, I think he's tremendous.
Yeah, you guys still have to kind of work out the middle to back end. I mean, you got Cookie Carrasco back there, but I honestly don't think Taijuan Walker is going to end up coming back. I think that he'll get a nice deal somewhere. For some reason, I think that he's going to land him in Arizona. I think that's a perfect spot. He's from there. They could certainly use
going back there.
Oh, going back there. That's right. Of course. In my head, he's always in Seattle. In my head, I completely forgot he was there. But I could see them solidifying the middle of their rotation with a Taijuan Walker. And I don't know if you guys saw Zach Allen had. He tweeted out eye emojis last week. I was really under the impression he was going to go, but nothing yet. But I mean, just free agency. Oh my gosh, what a great pitcher! But just free agency. I mean, you got Andrew Heaney, you got Jameson Taillon, Michael Wacha's still out there, who has been terrific since he left the Mets. Ryan Yarbrough's out there. There's certainly going to be available depth and middle to back end options, but. You know, you lose Jake, and you definitely have to fill in that front spot. Either of you heard anything about Kodai Senga?
I haven't heard about that, but I did hear that last week on Taijuan that the Mets made an aggressive push to try to lock down a deal with him, and that for whatever reason it didn't come to fruition. Who knows if that was because of them devoting time to other players as well, or if he kind of just wanted to do a little bit more diligence, take his time, and see what else was out there, but. It seems like he's definitely, strongly on the Mets radar right now as well. So that could be a good fit, I think, potentially.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
As is Senga. So Senga, they met with him in mid-November. And I think that there is some interest there. He, again, would be a great fit, a really good number 3, I think, if you're looking for somebody to take the kind of Bassett spot. And then Bassett is still out there too, and I don't think that they've necessarily shut the door on his return. So he would be another option to go back to if they decide that they don't like what else is out there.
See, I'm okay with kicking the tires on Johnny Cueto. I thought that he stepped up really well for the White Sox last year when they needed him. Model consistency. Again, he's not going to be a frontline guy, but he's going to eat up innings and he's going to give you outs. And he, I love that delivery. I like everything about Johnny Cueto. But that's
I love Johnny Cueto. Yeah.
Danny Duffy, I believe, is back out here, and I believe he's going to be healthy for the spring. If not for the spring, then some point earlier in the year. I would love to kick tires. I mean, these are all like upside guys. I know this is in old Mets years, they would look for these type of guys to like plug into the rotation. No, I'm fine with minor league free agent spring training invites with guys who can you stick him in Syracuse, and if you do need it, you have capable depth. I think the Mets came into last season, you know, building for that, and they did really well with it. I just, you know, with the momentum that they had, not this is not a knock on David Peterson. This is not a knock on is Lucchese still here? I forgot. Did he get DFA'd? No, he's still here, right, Lucchese?
He's still there.
Yeah. I know he was mentioned as a possibility, but, you know, these are all guys who could be depth, but you need more than that. And I think that the Mets have to find themselves in a similar position to continue the trajectory that they found themselves on last year. You don't win 101 games for nothing. They had a really, really nice plan in place, but they're going to need to, you know, get back to where they were personnel wise, vibe wise, however you want to look at it, and probably go above and beyond, because 101 wins didn't even get you the division. So, you know, you have to, it's going to be a lot to decide. And this is, you know, not even on the pitching side. They still have kinks to work out in their, on their positional side, but I guess we can get to that after the break, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Tim, because especially if you take on an aging Verlander, you know, regardless of how good he looked last year with him, Max, anchoring a rotation, you got two, you know, on the very older side aces that you're counting on. And then you get down the stretch, you know, if there's an injury to either one of those guys, you insulate yourselves a lot from the injury bug by having these guys like a Johnny Cueto or a Danny Duffy in the wings waiting to, you know, give you a spot start or, you know, give you five starts in a row, something like that. So I think down the stretch, that'd be huge from a depth standpoint.
I think that's why you could get a guy like Hefner and keep him on staff, right, is that he is able to work with these guys and get the most out of them.
Oh, and you think that, like, you know, when these guys are all sitting in their quote-unquote war room and saying, all right, who might be a good option for us? You know, I'm sure they're looking at metrics, and I'm sure they're looking at makeup or whatever these front offices are looking at guys and saying, oh, you know what, this guy might have had some down times, but he's a model of consistency. He's a workhorse, you know, whatever might be a fit for them. You know, you look at a guy like Cueto, or you look at a guy like Jameson Taillon, who had some really, really nice stretches for the Yankees last year. I would be perfectly fine having him in that 3-5 mix. You know, pretty much in my head, it would be like taking out Taijuan Walker and putting in Jameson Taillon. It's almost, I don't want to say a similar pitcher, but it's almost that level of back end solid depth. And I think he would be fine here, but yeah, the Mets really need to assess what they want to do with that front end, not this year. And I mean, not just this year, but moving into next year and through Max's contract. And let's say Verlander's got another year tacked onto that. If he comes in, like, you know, you almost have to look into this window and say, well, what's after this? You hate flying by the seat of your pants, and it feels like Jacob DeGrom kind of did that, and they're going to have to get themselves situated and just find solid ground again. And I think the only way to do that is to you know, bulk up that front end and then just, you know, add so much depth to that 3-4-5-6-7-8 gap in your rotation or you know, swing man role, whatever you want to look at it.
That's, again, another issue, the fact that they haven't really developed a ton of pitching since the, you know, the so-called like five aces.
Now they're all gone.
Yeah, they're all
gone. Yeah.
So I think that you will have to spend heavily on that, and that still remains the fact, and we can talk about it after the break, but
yeah.
the lineup needs help. You can't run it back the same way that it was this year.
No. All right. We'll take a quick break because we have like four more check marks on the list here. So we'll knock that out. All right. Hang tight. Listen to the ads. We'll be right back.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And we're back. Tim Ryder from the Apple, Taryn Sharma, and our buddy Owen Lynch. Owen Lynch, you've well-spoken buddy of Taryn's. It's been a pleasure to have you on so far.
I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure to be on. Nice gentleman to talk Mets baseball with. Never going to turn that down. So,
all right. Yeah, we like it. So I'm not sure if you guys were on Twitter through NFL Sunday today. Sean Murphy, backstop for the Oakland Athletics, is apparently on the trade block, which it's the Athletics, so they're always on the trade block. And two, he's kind of been whispered in those rumors in the past. Sean Murphy, hell of a catcher. Great, great arm, excellent framer, hits tanks, hits for like a 240, 250 average. But boy, he's going to get hot and he's going to hit you with, 15 extra base hits in a month. He's that impressive. And as we've spoken about on the show in the past, he's just got like one of the most impressive backsides in Major League history. If they had stats for that, I'm sure he would lead. But the Mets, as we know, need depth at catcher. James McCann has not been what the Mets hoped they would. He's not been what anybody kind of expected he would. Still has time to change. He's still a youngish player. He's, had some injury issues, but yeah, he hasn't been great. Tomas Nido is one of the best defensive catchers in baseball, but in today's game, you need offense. Yeah. No, Sean Murphy is not going to hit 290. He's not going to be, Buster Posey reincarnated, but he will give you pop. He'll give you good defense. Not that the Mets have been mentioned as a possibility, but given the Mets' need for additional catching depth, additional catching talent, the possibility that Francisco Alvarez might not be behind the plate, he might be situated in a DH-type role next year. If you're the Mets, are you pushing in for a Sean Murphy type guy? Are you going in for an addition at the catching position?
Yeah, I think it depends on the cost, right? But I would prefer to have him back there than James McCann.
Agreed. Yeah, I think a lot of it would also be how defensively sound they see Alvarez being potentially, and the viability there. Yeah. I think that if they think it's going to be a little bit of harder work in, camp on his defense, and then the progression over time at getting better, kind of like when people thought Pete was a liability at first, and now he's gotten to a respectable level. Yeah. Then I think that, Alvarez is definitely the long-term answer. But I think to Taryn's point, if we can get a good trade for Murphy to be, that guy for either the long haul and then put Alvarez as the DH, or, have Murphy for a couple of years at catcher and then transition to Alvarez there in the long haul, I think both those could be good options if the cost isn't too high.
And to the point on Alvarez, I think bringing in Sean Murphy and having a guy like that who's an established catcher that can give you a little bit something, and he is good behind the plate, I think that really removes a lot of the pressure that there will be on Francisco Alvarez. Because if Alvarez comes up and he's hitting, like, it would be nice to be able to continue to use the DH spot in the way that they were this year, kind of like to give Pete a day off, to get Daniel Vogel back in there. And so if you don't have to have a everyday DH kind of player, and especially not your young catcher, giving him more experience behind the plate, but also, having somebody that you can really rely on back there, like Sean Murphy and his giant wagon.
And someone brought this up at the Queens baseball convention on Saturday, which was a great time. If you guys were there, thank you. It was so much fun. I was lucky enough to be on a panel, but someone brought in, Josh Bell's name. And we've spoken about Josh Bell on the show here in the past. And he's a beast. He's an offensive beast. He would be an ideal designated hitter type, whether it be a DH, whether it be spelling Pete at first base, he can be that guy. He had a very, very tough second half last year, him and Juan Soto in San Diego after coming over. But if you look at their metrics, they really weren't seeing a lot of strikes. Josh Bell, to the point that, you know, he was league leaders in lowest first pitch strike rate, lowest strike rate in general. You know, he was probably, I guess, bottom 20 in both of those stats. I think that he would be a tremendous addition to shore up, whether it's DH, whether it's getting reps at first base. But I think it's going to be almost a domino effect of, okay, what do we have now and what can we do to improve on that? And that whether it's for Sean Murphy, whether it's for Josh Bell, whether it's, you know, you have to kind of wonder about what happens with Brandon Nimmo now. Brandon Nimmo is a fine center fielder. He's going to command big money. He's played 100 games in his career twice. But when he has played, he's been one of the more productive players in baseball. It is the quagmire of every quandary you could ever possibly think of. Like, the Mets have to look at every spot in their roster and say, what's going to work for us? What can we do to make it better? And then they have to make it work, let it work out, or at least, you know, usher in development so it does take hold. It's, you know, everyone wants to look at, you know, the Mets did well and they came up short and they got all this momentum. But man, if you really dig into this, they have a lot of holes to fill if they want to keep up with teams like the Braves and the Dodgers and now the Phillies, who finally found their lightning in a bottle. Yeah. You know, what if, you know, Philadelphia gets Trey Turner? What if San Diego gets Trey Turner? Yeah. The landscape is just constantly shifting in the NL. It's going to be up to the Mets and every other team to, you know, keep up.
Yeah, and I think Turner would be a great fit here. He's a guy some center field also. And, you know, there's one name out there that I think instantly not only fills a hole defensively, but fundamentally changes the lineup. And it's not going to happen, but Judge. And so if Steve could make that happen, if you could spend the money that it will take to, like, make that Godfather offer and get Judge here, I think that is, like, such a slam dunk for this team and their needs.
Oh my goodness. Whether it's Judge, I mean, you know, if the Mets really want to go make splashes, you know, you have right now, at least you have some very high end prospects. If the Mets are willing or are interested in going that route, you know, they could theoretically make very, very strong pushes for some very, very big players, whether it be on the trade front, whether it be via Judge in free agency. They kind of have the world in their hands, but it's kind of up to them, and it's up to that 3 to 5 year plan, and it's up to sustainability. And again, when it's not your money, it's so nice to be like, oh yeah, let's trade all the good prospects for Otani. Let's go sign Judge and let's go sign Rodon and Verlander too, and just go win a World Series. But you know, there's so much more to it.
Yeah. And it takes two, right? Like,
yeah,
the guy has to be willing to play here. So
I think Otani kind of has that itch. I know he has the past with Epler. I'm very curious to see whether Epler survives this season. I think this is his make or break year, right?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. His contract doesn't even go after this year, right?
Is that right? Oh, I thought he had another one after this.
Yeah, I saw a report earlier from, I believe, Ken Rosenthal that said that there were speculations that this is, as you said, Tim, you know, Epler's make or break year, especially with David Stearns being available next year potentially. So I think there's a lot of pressure on him to really perform as the GM this year. And I think that this offseason, if we can make a huge splash, not only to win a World Series, but to also give Epler some peace of mind and really make sure he's, you know, leaving no stone unturned in his, you know, quest to ensure he saves his job. I think that's also another factor, right? Psychology behind it.
James Click is also out there.
Yeah.
And he just won a World Series.
Yeah. And oh, did you see Jeff Bagwell's comments on James Click and the Astros going just, I guess, too far into the metrics and the analytics? And this is coming off a team winning a World Series, right?
Not just one, like, you know, two, whatever they did in 2017, like, obviously they were cheating. We don't know who else was doing that, but and then a couple other pennants sprinkled in there. This is like the golden era of Astros baseball and like complaining about anything that they've been doing. If you're a fan of theirs is mind boggling.
Only thing worse was that soul patch that was like 3.5 inches long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff Bagwell. I'm not sure if you're a listener, but that, yeah, it's gotta go, pal. It's gotta go.
He's fuming somewhere in Texas.
Yeah. Hey, we've talked about Jeff Bagwell and his, you know, I was a kid when, you know, in the 90s, and Jeff Bagwell was outstanding, man. He was probably in like an beyond an MVP level stratosphere one season. I want to say it was 96. And he got hit by a pitch in August, and he broke the hamate bone in his hand. They put a pad on the end of his glove. This thing must have been 3 inches thick. I really want to say that we had this conversation on this show. Every player should be wearing these things. This thing, you couldn't get through his bone if you tried. You could swing a baseball bat at it. You couldn't break his freaking hand again. Sorry. Amazing. But, yeah, now he's just got a soul patch that I don't even think you could call it a soul patch anymore. It's like it's a cabbage patch, I think. Owen, what are you up to, man? What are you traveling with Taryn this weekend?
Yeah. So I'm a big Jets fan as well as Mets fan. So, when I heard the Jets were playing the Vikings out in Minnesota and it coincided with Taryn's birthday weekend, I figured it was a perfect time to, you know, get out from the tri-state area to come, you know, visit him and watch the Jets, you know, hopefully win, but, you know, ends up losing a heartbreaker today. I'm not sure.
It was a great game.
It was a great game. Yeah. Tim, I'm not sure if you're a Jets fan as well, but great, great action for sure.
Oh, I'm a Giants fan, and we got to watch our team tie today, which is just so silly. You know, I'm a football fan. I played football my whole life. I'm more of a baseball fan than football fan. I'm more of just, you know, whatever. I don't lose my mind over the Giants. But, boy, that was just so disappointing. I really want NCAA overtime rules to be moved into NFL and, you know, start it from the 25, do whatever you got to do. That's really how it should be. But this is not a football podcast. We can get into it, but we'll have to start another different show.
What do you think about Brian Reynolds, Tim? Do you think he's a good fit for the Mets potentially if the Pirates will move him? What are your thoughts on him?
Well, before you answer that, let me just we can talk about the proposed trade that that Lennon was talking about on SNY. But we would receive Brian Reynolds, and then it would be Parada, Alex Ramirez, Mark Vientos, and Dominic Hamill.
That's too much. I would swap out, and I was talking with the boys over at Mets up this weekend. I think we would switch out Ziegler, keep Hamill, and I would do Vientos and Ramirez. Oh, I think we're just about out of time though. I'm gonna put a pin in this because I do feel like Brian Reynolds, even though the Pittsburgh Pirates will never say they'll trade him, I do think he will be traded. And this is going to be fodder for Friday's episode, I believe. Taryn, Owen, can't thank you guys enough for joining us. Guys, we'll be back later in the week because winter meetings, things should be cooking. Yeah. And you know the sign-off. Let's fucking go Mets! I'm so happy we're back. Taryn, Owen, thank you guys again.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, guys. We'll see you guys next time. It's Let's Go Mets, and that's all we got. Peace!